Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Attention, collectors of vinyl. Have you ever gone into a record store and felt overwhelmed by all the unfamiliar options? Are you frustrated by the constantly increasing prices of classic rock staples? Do you avoid streaming music or long for the days when music was recommended to you by a friend instead of an algorithm? If the answer to any of these questions is yes, then check out I'd Buy That for a Dollar, a podcast about inexpensive, common, and underappreciated records that are waiting to be rediscovered. Each week, hosts Sean, Jeremy, and Peter discuss an album and the artist's history. Previous episodes include selections by The Isley Brothers, The Carpenters, The Doobie Brothers, and Donna Summer, among others. Become a bargain bin pro and impress all your friends with cool music trivia. Listen to I'd Buy That for a Dollar wherever you get your podcasts.
You know, I think in Japan, that sound is not legal. The beeping backwards truck sound.
What do you mean? It's illegal to have that on your truck?
Yeah, like apparently it doesn't really do anything for safe places have bylaws against vehicles having that sound. And it just makes you think like the street that they're doing construction on is closed.
Yeah.
This truck is probably backing up like 5 feet every time that thing goes on, but I have to hear it all day.
Yeah, that's a good, I mean, you're making a good argument to move to Japan, really.
Like, can't our leaders get rid of the truck beeping sound?
I feel like they have other priorities at the moment, but you might be onto something. It's worth a letter or maybe calling into like a news talk show to complain.
But that's what this was.
Well, that's not exactly what it is, but it's close.
Hello, fellow Creative Control listeners. My name is Mac Cameron. I live in Toronto, and I have been listening to Creative Control with Vish Khanna since episode 119 that featured all five members of one of my favorite bands, Constantines. I listen backwards from there and then forwards, and I know it sounds, you know, over the top or cliche, but finding the show changed the course of my life. It inspired me to pursue a career in radio and to do what I can to support the arts in my community and across the country. So I give to Creative Control because I feel like I owe the show and Vish for helping me figure out what the hell to do with my life. Beyond that, I give to Creative Control because I think independent media, especially insightful, entertaining, thoughtful, and thorough independent media, is something that is worth paying for. What I appreciate about Creative Control is Vish's ability to treat Canadian artists, or any artist for that matter, with the seriousness and appreciation he would any other artist. His excellent rapport with people like Steve Albini and the members of Fugazi and Stephen Malkmus and others have earned him international appreciation. However, it's his trove of interviews with what I consider to be the most exciting generation of Canadian musicians, conducted out of genuine passion and interest, that makes this show so special. I think it is an archive of some really exciting music that is way, way underreported on and appreciated. That's why I contribute to Creative Control with Vish Khanna, and I hope you will do the same.
To make your flexible monthly donation to Creative Control, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol today. I'm Vish's wife, and I will love him no matter what you do, and now he has me on the record saying that.
Please consider supporting Black Women United YEG for the protection and advancement of black women and girls in Alberta. You can learn more about them at bwunited.ca They are always looking for donations and volunteers. So please, again, support Black Women United, YEG, for the protection and advancement of Black women and girls in Alberta. Again, that website is bwunited.ca. Mike Halichuk is a musician, community organizer, writer, producer, and singer based in Toronto, Ontario. For the better part of the past 20 years, Halichuk has been the bandleader and idea initializer for the excellent band Fucked Up, who once won Canada's Polaris Music Prize and are internationally renowned for their ambitious punk rock records and chaotic live shows. Between February and May of 2021, Fucked Up is releasing one side of a double record each month on Bandcamp, with each quarter representing an act in a four-part song. Part of their Zodiac series, this new release is entitled The Year of the Horse Whose Name Was Percival, which makes good on the band's longstanding plan to create a rock opera. Recently, and just ahead of the release of the third act, Mike and I reconnected and he returned to the show to get into the idea and making of The Year of the Horse Whose Name Was Percival, dystopian fiction and westerns, operas by Wagner and learning to play cello, Damien Abraham's new singing styles, the 10th anniversary of Fucked Up's classic album David Comes to Life, future plans, and much more. A part of the Entertainment One Network, with the support of listeners like you who follow and subscribe to this podcast and spread the word about it and make flexible monthly donations at patreon.com/creativecontrol, and Massey Hall's concert film series, live at MasseyHall.com, where you can stream dozens of 30-minute films for free, including performances by past podcast guests like Jennifer Castle, plus in-kind support from Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee in Guelph, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton. This is the 605th episode of Creative Control, featuring the lovely and talented Mike Halichuk from Fucked Up, with your host, me, Vish Khanna. Hey, Mike, how's it going there?
It's okay. Hey, Vish.
Nice to have you back on the show, and welcome back to me. It's nice.
Yeah,
to,
thanks for having me.
It's been a while, I think, since we've spoken in person. We tend to correspond, but I don't actually know how you're doing. How are you doing generally?
I'm fine. Just a little bit bored. I think we talked last on this, like at the very beginning of the pandemic, maybe. Like maybe even in March or something, last March.
Yeah, it was you and Jonah. Is that the call? That
yeah.
was the call. Yeah. Yeah, that's true. And we were lots of speculating about what life was going to be like and what was going on. Were we right about anything? I don't remember what we talked about.
we were probably wrong.
I think we were right. I think Jonah had been like, the music industry is going to die. These clubs and bars aren't going to open up again. I mean, we don't know if he was totally right, but a bunch of things did get shut down. It wasn't we didn't have the cheeriest outlook, I suppose. And I think some of that came to pass. But as I'm speaking to you now, optimism, we are inundated with optimistic ideas, vaccines, normalcy coming. How are you feeling about that?
Pretty good. We just got like a show offer for October. We were booking stuff and our guy was like, the earliest you can do anything is January. And then we got an offer for October. And then I realized we also have a show in September.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
I mean, that's good. Is it involving travel or is it a virtual show? What kind of show is it?
It's a fest in Chicago.
Oh.
Which was supposed to be last September, but they put it ahead a year. But who knows if it'll happen. But, I mean, it has to start eventually.
Yeah, you would think so. It's some sort of normalcy with, like, the masks and the maybe fewer people. It's something. I mean, I okay, good. It sounds like you're saying who knows, but at the same time, feeling pretty good.
There's dates on the board.
That's better than it could be. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, Jonah is still in England, right?
Yeah, he lives there.
He lives there on the boat. That's what we discovered the last time.
He lives on a boat, yeah.
Yeah, so he's still away. Is everyone else in the band around Toronto otherwise?
Yep.
Okay, good.
Yep.
No one else has split. Okay, good. Well, this time we're talking about Fucked Up. Last time we were talking about Jade Hairpins. This time we're talking about Fucked Up. The Year of the Horse, whose name was Percival. Is that what we're talking about today, Mike?
Yeah. I mean, it's your podcast.
It is. I get to make the calls. Yeah. For those who don't know, I feel like we have to start with the Zodiac series on some level, unless you don't want to, but maybe we should. What? The Year of the Horse is part of that series, yes?
Yeah, so the horse, I think, is the ninth animal we've dealt with in this series.
Okay, so it is a series. What is the nature of the series as it relates to Fucked Up albums and whatnot? This one seems very ambitious, but there will be people being like, what the hell? What's the difference? I feel like this is organizationally a thing you do to be like, we're doing this now. It's a record still, right? Like, let's get to that. This is still an album, is it not?
This one is it's album length. For me, the classification of what they are physically is less important than the songs. Some they just tend to be long songs.
Hmm.
Yeah. But whether people think that they're EPs or LPs, does it really matter?
Hmm.
You know?
Yeah. Okay.
This one is sort of like an actual opera. Maybe it's like we've kidded around with doing like rock operas before, but this one being about 90, 95 minutes, it's just one song that takes up that length. There's like repeating motifs in sound. There's a big story populated by characters and setting and stuff. It is like that's what an opera is.
Yeah, yeah.
Except it probably won't be performed on stage by actors and stuff.
Mm.
But yeah, it's just we hadn't done one in a long time, and then we haven't put an album out for a couple of years, so me and Jonah recorded two sides of this like 5 or 6 years ago, just assuming that we would make it slightly longer than normal, but then we were like, fuck it. I actually wanted to make it six sides of a record.
Oh.
But we just sort of ran out of time and thought that was a bit preposterous. So, but it's a pretty long song.
So, okay. So the songs that were recorded 5 or 6 years ago, have we heard those ones? So my understanding, this is a four acts basically? Is that right?
Yeah. Four acts, four sides.
Four sides. So, the sides we've heard or that I've heard thus far are, acts one and two. Do those date back to that 5 or 6 year ago era that you're describing?
We actually wrote side one and side three at the same on the same session in 2015, and then we recorded Dose Your Dreams in the following couple years, and then by that time Jonah was living in England already, so it was a matter of like anytime we had a show in North America, he would come a couple weeks early and then we would do some studio time and just do whatever.
Yeah.
And so I think in like 2017 or 18, we did sides B and D at the same time. So as the sides get released, people may notice that they have like those sides sort of sound quite similar.
Right.
Because we use like different gear and different effects and instruments and stuff. And then we just have been mixing it and editing it and putting the backup vocalists since then.
Okay.
And just sort of waiting.
Okay, because a couple of the lyrical things stuck out to me as being fairly topical or relevant, or they seem that way. It's a weird thing with music and artists, I find. They do a thing, and then something happens in the world, and then we all apply this retroactive prescience to the words. Like, oh my God, they were talking. I'll explain. In scene two of act one,
yeah,
a couple of passages that stuck out to me. This is about a character named Blanche. By the way,
yeah,
hopefully you can tell us more about these characters as we go. But I just want to read this out to people with your permission. Is it okay?
Yeah.
A poison had come to their home and everyone was sick and no one remembered any other way of living, save for lies, villainy, and killing. Later on, that's about Blanche. Later on, from Blanche, Mother, there's a darkness coming in through the window. Please hold my hand. Keep me safe from the shadow. I mean, we're in a pandemic, so you know where I'm going with this. When was this written?
The lyrics were written before the pandemic. But I think those are sort of very generic, like light, and it's like sort of Stephen King-esque generic storytelling almost, you know, where it sounds prescient because it's just so broad. Like there's a darkness coming that can relate to anything, I think.
I think a poison had come to their home and everyone was sick.
Do you think COVID is poison?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't think, what is your designation there? I think it kills you. It's a virus.
I'm just thinking of poison as like one of those like old timey vials triple X on the label.
No. I don't believe there's anything nefarious about it. Yeah. Poison has a connotation. You're correct. However, no, I think stuff coming in, there's a darkness coming in through the window. We're dealing with an airborne or have been dealing with an airborne disease. That's all. I'm just saying,
yeah.
I don't want to be one of those people, by the way, that says you must have known what was going on, but there's a thing that I think we talked about this maybe last time. There's a thing with dystopian writing that some of it seems like not self-fulfilling prophecy, but like it's weird how close we get to all the stuff we think is fantastical. And so that's where I'm coming from. You've written this opera or, you know, I don't know if this is technically a libretto, but you're writing something and it feels predictive on some level. And I think you're into that kind of stuff, right? Dystopian writing.
Yeah, but this isn't like, I like dystopian like science fiction and stuff, but this was conceived like very much as a sort of like a classical like Western
yes.
sort of theme.
Sure.
And I think any kind of like genre storytelling like that, you're dealing with archetypes, right? And so when you talk about archetypes, they're going to apply to lots of things. Like if the pandemic didn't happen, we could have been like, oh, you know, this song is about Trump or like any large looming terrible thing, just because it's easy when you're talking about light and dark, like just the binary way of existing, you know, almost every big social thing fits into it.
Fair.
But I don't think this story is dystopic. I think it's like fantastical, right? It involves like the darkness is magic and like a guy putting a spell on this town.
Well, yeah, I don't necessarily think it's dystopian unless you think of certain, I don't know, Middle Earth type stories as being sort of dystopian or teaching us something about ourselves and where we're going. I mean, in this case, you've got a cast of characters that some of them are horses.
One's a horse.
Isn't there a Pegasus as well? I just assumed Pegasus was a horse.
Yeah, it's about a horse that is born of the stars, the constellations. It's sort of taking the zodiac idea literally and saying there's all these animals that have their origins in the heavens as their constellations. Like Pegasus is a horse constellation. What else? There's Corvus is a character in this, which is a raven constellation.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a couple others. And this story is about somehow this young horse has found herself trapped on Earth and needs to get back to her home.
Right. And then there's also, at one point, I believe, we hear from the river. The river is kind of able to express itself, which, you know, certainly in indigenous culture, all sorts of cultural forms, certain elemental aspects of our lives are personified or whatnot. And so when I hear the river talking to me on the record, I'm like, wait a minute, what does that signify per se? And when I look at the cast of characters, yeah, you're right, there's one horse. And then various townspeople, animals, and spirits. Are you delving into the spirit world here as well?
Yeah, kind of in a made up way. It's just sort of a way to convey, like me and a friend, David James Brock, spent a couple years like writing this out as a story, and then I adapted the lyrics from that story. So there isn't like a talking river in the story, but it's harder to like convey tense in lyrics because like inherently they're a lot shorter, and it's just weirder, especially when like you're writing something that ideally should be like presented by a cast of characters, but we don't really have the resources or like the know-how to really do that. So you know, when you can't have like 15 people singing on the same record from all their voices, that's when you end up having like a river having to tell a couple of the bars.
Right. You know what I mean? Yeah, I mean, there are lots of really compelling and I think surprising vocals that happen here. Like just people, I don't even recognize some of the names of the guests you have on here. Before I delve into the, I want to get into the whole fantastical Wild West motif in a moment, but I feel like we should, you mentioned David, I feel like we should talk about some of the people that helped you make this fucked up record, and if anyone's missing, I don't see Benny's name on here, by the way. Is Ben not on this record?
He's not. I don't really know where Ben is. Okay. But, okay. Yeah, the vocalists, the two main vocalists are a performer named Tuca from London, who is a friend of Jonah's,
mm-hmm.
and then Megan, who is, I believe she plays guitar in Chubby and the Gang and sort of has a couple other projects and I think sort of like a folk based thing that she sings in.
Yeah.
And so these are just these two people that Jonah was friends with and they just ended up all over the record. But that's the thing, if we really conceive this as like a stage play or something, those two would have smaller parts, right? But
yeah.
Because they sort of play in quotations, they play several different characters.
Yeah.
But those are the main two. And then I do a couple of the weird, like all the really deep affected vocals are me.
Yeah, that recalls maybe the work you did on Dose Your Dreams a little, I thought.
Kind of.
Well, I mean, the river, aren't you the river? Aren't you singing as, I'm not saying you're the river, but aren't you singing as the river? Is that you?
Yes.
Right. And it has that sort of deep, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. We each went for like a Fever Ray kind of sounding thing.
Yeah, exactly. There you go. Yeah. As I said, I want to go back to the fantastical Western part of the Year of the Horse. Why were you fascinated by, are you generally fascinated by Westerns? Do you like Westerns?
No, I sort of hate Westerns, and I don't really understand. I haven't seen many Westerns. I don't really understand the like the storytelling part or how you're supposed to do it.
Mm.
But, you know, with these records, we try to cater the theme of them to something that it lends itself to that animal. And so horse, like, obviously it's going to be sort of Western themed. And so, yeah, I grappled with that. And my friend David, the aforementioned David, is a big fan of Westerns. And so we just, originally the story was going to, like, we were sort of like, okay, how do we write a cool story about this horse? It has to sort of take place probably in the American Southwest. All the trappings. Originally, yeah. it was going to be about a horse whose rider was shot and killed. And then this horse was just sort of wandering around the desert trying to figure a way to get its saddle off, like all the rider's equipment.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is sort of, it's like a nugget of an interesting idea. But then we were like, are we really going to write a story from the perspective of a horse that can't talk and is basically, it was just an impossible story to tell.
Mm-hmm.
So then it just morphed into this thing where we were like, how do we involve people in it and sort of tell a similar story of the burden of humanity on this animal. And then I was listening to a lot of like Wagner, the last Wagner opera, Parzival, and sort of cribbed a bunch of stuff from that. And then I sort of, when I was a kid, when I was like 13 or 14, I was really into like reading up on Grail, Holy Grail mythology.
Yeah. Yeah.
But like not from really a religious way. It was sort of like in the 80s, there was a couple like bestseller nonfiction books about the Holy Grail I believe somebody who was in the Buzzcocks might have co-written one of them. Like there's some old punk guy who got into this as well and wrote like a huge book. But the idea was that Jesus was a real person and wasn't crucified and like started a family after his adventures in the Bible or whatever, started a family with Mary Magdalene, and the Holy Grail, which conventionally is either a cup that caught, I guess, yeah, it's the cup that caught Jesus's blood while he was being crucified.
Yeah.
But these authors were like, there's like a 2,000-year-old conspiracy, which is that the Holy Grail is actually Jesus's bloodline, like his family genealogy. And there's been all these weird secret societies that have been dedicated to protecting Jesus's bloodline, which means that, like, somewhere on Earth, there's descendants of this person now. And so I was like, I got obsessed with this when I was a kid.
Hmm.
And again, like, I'm not a religious person, and I don't even really think it's that interesting a conspiracy theory now. It just sort of like all these weird things lined up together to tell this story. So it's sort of like the Grail mythology on top of like slightly Arthurian legend stuff, and then the Wagner, like all of our character names for this record are sort of cribbed from Wagner's Grail retelling. And so it's that, like, as a Western.
Okay, so yeah, because I think, isn't the horse named after a knight in like King Arthur mythology?
Yeah, Percival.
Right. So you've got Percival the horse. Any relationship to the knight and what that knight stood for or represents?
Not really. That's the thing. Like, we borrowed some names, but it was hard to transpose the entire thing, especially because like storytelling back then was like so weird. Like the Parsifal opera by Wagner is based on a book called Parzival with a V instead of an F from like the 1300s, like an actual medieval book, which is where Arthurian legend comes from.
Right.
And you know, the character Percival is in like a third of it, and then he just pieces out and it becomes about this other knight. And it's just like the narrative of it is just like so all over the place.
Yeah.
So we couldn't really like adapt that straight. It just shares the sense of like Percival is kind of the protagonist, but Percival is just really the delivery mechanism of like the theme, which is, you know, transcending above your earthly bounds or like, you know, your problems or your issues.
Hmm. Okay. So I get that part. And you mentioned Wagner, complicated figure, Wagner, wasn't he?
Yeah, I just read that Alex Ross, who is a sort of classical music journalist.
Yeah, I've interviewed Alex before.
Oh,
yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I just read his like 800 page book about Wagner.
Mm-hmm.
And I forget most of the things I read, but yeah, I think he was like very much a proto, like he's like an anti-Semite.
Yeah.
And obviously his works have been used for nefarious purposes.
Yes.
The interesting thing about him is when he died, he was working on a Buddhist opera, which probably would have been quite sick.
Yeah, right. He didn't finish it.
He perished.
He perished, yes.
Yeah.
Well, I don't mean to invoke Wagner too much, but you mentioned him a few times. It does seem like he looms here, and there is kind of like a Baroque quality here and there. Like, this is the thing with this particular Zodiac. Well, I guess I'm just racking my brain. They have kind of a mixtape quality. These are long songs, but stylistically, they jump all over the place. And as a matter of fact, did you learn how to play cello for this, or did you have this already in your back pocket?
Yeah, like in 2016 or 15, I just was like, I think the cello is a cool instrument. And I was listening actually to a lot of sarangi music.
Hmm.
You know this instrument?
Tell us more. I'm familiar with it, but I don't know enough about it.
It's a string instrument used in ragas.
Right.
So it's like, it's part of that tradition.
Right.
And I was listening to a lot of ragas and I was like, fuck, this instrument is so sick. And it's like so evocative. And it is sort of known as the instrument that sounds the most like the human voice. And then I went to Nepal I went to Kathmandu for a couple weeks. And I tried to buy a sarangi, but I could only find like these shitty plastic ones, like in just sort of like
tourist bazaars. Yeah.
Yeah, just like bazaars in that sort of area.
Yep.
And I was like, I'm not going to spend $1,000 and buy like this crazy wooden instrument that's going to get broken on a plane. So I got home and I was reading about the cello, and in the Western tradition, cellos are sort of known as the instrument that sounds most like the human voice.
Mm.
And so I was listening to a lot of that, and I was like, fuck it. Like, I have the time. I'm just going to try to learn how to play the cello. I had never played a string instrument before. And so I took a couple lessons, and I had it for a couple years just around the house, and I was quite bad at it. It was very hard.
Yeah.
You know, I'm quite an established guitar player.
Yes.
Of note.
No one can doubt that. No one can, undermine that sentiment.
It doesn't transpose. Like, not having frets is, like, really it's really hard to get your mind around.
Mm-hmm.
But I got good enough that I could sort of, like, put my finger somewhere and draw a bow against it. And, you know, that sounds great. Like, the cello is such a compelling instrument that just, like, playing one note slightly okay sounds great. So I just did a bunch of that in the studio. And that's what we based the song around. It was like, I was able to perform notes, and we comp them and edit them together in the studio, and that's how the song took off.
Right.
So yeah, it's sort of a cello base to this song.
Yeah, there's I feel like these, and so there's other elements too. Like there's one point where things kind of break down, and there's like a Western kind of guitar section, and. And then all the sections with the non-male vocalist, or I guess non-Damian vocalist, or non-you, the people who are the guests, like, those have a very specific kind of character to them. You know, we're really, I feel like we're taken through time and space a little bit as these acts unfold, and that's purposeful. Like, that gives it a very theatrical sort of flow. It's like, I can picture the curtain falling at the end of Damien screaming, and then when we come back, it's a new scene kind of thing. Is that kind of what you're going for?
Yeah, we really did try to make it sound cinematic in that way. And after, like, David Comes to Life and Dose Your Dreams being sort of like narrative focused records, but also like just didn't really make sense.
Yeah.
Which I think people are always like, oh, you know, fucked up. They're so weird. They don't want to make their stories make sense at all. It's so weird and blah blah blah. It's just like, that's just a drawback of us. Like, I don't know how to really tell stories. I don't have any like education and like narrative and this kind of stuff. With this one, I was really like, you know, if we're gonna have characters and try to tell a story with this record, I don't really want to fuck around.
Yeah,
I wanted to sort of make sense conventionally, even if we're writing about like magical stars and wizards and stuff. I still wanted to like people to be able to follow it. So yeah, hopefully, I don't know, it's impossible to know how other people experience this, your song, but hopefully like the story sticks out as much as the music does and can travel together.
Well, I will say also that, so we talked about the musical shifts, and I think Damien also is doing things with his voice and his delivery that create this dynamic sort of attack on the song. Like, the song's characters change as he alters his voice. And I mean, we talked about your voice as the river. And so that also just shifts the mood. Did you talk to Damien at all about how he was going to approach singing some of these songs or some of these parts, I guess?
No. And see, this is the other cool thing is that, so you'll notice this when all the songs come out, but the other thing that happened between recording the first two sides and the second two sides is I just got a normal guitar octave pedal. And so the bulk of sides B and D have this like very low tuning in the guitar because of this pedal. And they sort of, we did like a stoner rock kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then Damien did his vocals at the start of the pandemic.
Hmm.
And yeah, he just went in and he was just by himself. Like, he was with an engineer he had never used before.
Yeah.
And he told me that like he would just go in, he would go in with a mask and walk straight into the booth and spend whatever, like 6 or 7 hours just in the little recording booth.
Yeah.
And he managed to like accomplish
like three or four new styles that he'd never really tried in the like 20 years of us being in a band.
Yeah.
To like really great effect, I thought. And it just sort of opened up like these new, like I would get the vocals back and I would be like, this like four bar section that he's done in this like sort of melodic style, like we could do a whole album in that style.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, yeah, to me, like that, I think that's the thing with us of like why we keep doing such weird shit is that like every time you do something weird, there'll be like a minute in it that opens up a new door of like a new style. And then you could do another record like that.
Yeah.
So I feel like we'll probably do an album of that style where it's just sort of this like melodic stoner rock thing just because of like the shit he was trying by himself recording these vocals.
I'm very surprised to know that you in particular weren't around because it really seems to me that, and I mean, I know he's capable of making these decisions himself, but for him to make the decisions he's made here based on, I assume, what he was reading off the page or the rest of the music, like just very interesting and strong decision making on his part, if I might say, you know, like it's just really,
yeah,
it suits the song. It really gives the record. Again, we've talked about all the ways the record shifts around, but I think he's really stepped up on that level. It's not just him roaring. When he needs to sound demonic, he sounds completely demonic, like different demonic, if you know what I
mean.
Yeah. Yeah.
He just, his range on this record is like, is crazy.
Yes.
And I think a lot of it is just like, it eventually catches up to you where you do so many out there albums and just sort of like, there's no consequences for them. And especially this, like during, you know, making stuff during the pandemic, mm-hmm. and a Zodiac record, like there's really no pressure to try weird shit, especially on these records, because like we never really play them live. And so you're not ever going to face an audience and have to like deal with the crazy decisions. Like I can go into the studio and like do really dumb vocals on this thing, but I would never be able to do it like in front of an audience. You know what I mean?
I do know what you mean. I wonder if you don't, like when I think when we did an interview about Dose Your Dreams, I kind of asked you about, because you have this interest in writing, like I appreciate what you're saying about like not having the training or knowing exactly how to tell a story properly or whatever you were saying, which I think you're, I hope you know you're, to my ear, you're downplaying your skills. I think you do a great job of that and you've done it before. But I think I was also like, don't you ever want to explore other mediums, like beyond music, even like maybe you can do some sort of prose thing. And you've gradually, not gradually, I think since maybe the outset, you have been a narrative songwriter and created these universes and these characters. This to me seems like it would be, in a perfect world where you could put on stuff live in front of people, this would be a cool thing to see. Like, and I know you've, I guess, do you think your audience doesn't want to see you do these things, or do you not want to do these things, like stage them?
It's just really hard. Like, you know, if you spend so much of your life becoming good at one thing, it's hard to look back and then be like, okay, so I'm going to spend 10 years, the next 10 years of my life, being good enough at like writing plays that like somebody is going to want to put one of my, you know what I mean? Like a couple years ago, I wrote like 100-page book, like a 100-page poem, basically.
Yeah.
But just because I've done that doesn't mean that like automatically it's good or that anyone's going to want to read it or put it out. You know what I mean? Like,
well, it's enough, a lot of work. Yeah.
But that's the thing. Like, I do spend a lot of my off, like my free time, like I'm working on a novel. I've written this other you know what I mean? I've done this stuff, but being good at any kind of art, to the extent that other people want to listen to it, is like not easy, and it's not a given. So we did try to adapt David Comes to Life into a stage play,
right?
But it's just hard. It's just it's the kind of thing where like somebody would just have to come forward and be like, I'm going to take care of this and I'm going to make this because that's what I know how to do.
Yeah.
Rather than us just being like, assuming we could show up somewhere and then automatically like make a movie or, you know?
Yeah, I know it's hard, but I know you're into that difficulty. I think you're into the ambitious part of like, Let's bring in a crew of people. Like, if I just, let me just count here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. There's like 13 characters in this record, not counting the spirits and other things, I think, right?
Yeah.
And so it is. It would be ambitious to put this on, but anyway, all this to say, like, so far, as I'm speaking to you, it's the middle of March. I've only heard the first two acts. It's good. It's really cool. Like, it's very interesting, and I've been lucky to kind of dig into what I ostensibly is a chapbook. Will there be an accompanying chapbook when this comes out in physical form, or...?
There'll be sort of like a libretto-looking thing, I think. Like, with the record, we'll probably make something that looks like those pamphlets you get when you that's waiting for you at your seat.
Yeah.
In, like, a play or something.
Right.
Maybe crossed with, like, a cut-and-paste style zine thing.
Okay.
I think that we eventually will do this at some in some capacity on stage. Like, we're just not – we don't have the chops is the other thing, right? Like, we've had very limited experience. Like, we did the Zanzibar live score.
Mm-hmm.
It's just hard. Like, we're not
– well,
other than really Jonah, like, none of us are really the kind of players that have the chops to really do that kind of stuff. Like, think about what a fucked up show is, right? It's like – it's this visceral, fast-pounding thing. It's hard to, like, transpose your limited skill in that to something more rigorous in terms of playing. Like, me and Jonah did write an opera a couple years ago that was performed for a couple weeks.
Yeah.
And it was really cool. Like, I played guitar in it in a very limited capacity. But I'm on stage with, like, these classically trained instrumentalists who were like all are reading off of sheet music, and I was like I was truly like years and years behind these people's playing, even though I'd been playing guitar for 20 years. Like, yeah, it's hard.
Is it the chops or the practice? Like, I remember the Dose Your Dreams release show at the Horseshoe.
Yeah.
And as I recall, you played the record in sequence, which is not that even seemed from my vantage point, seemed challenging.
We only played about half of it. There's probably 8 or 9 songs on that record we've never played and probably never will play.
Right.
But if you listen, like, that CBC recording of that show, there's just so many mistakes in it.
Oh, I didn't hear the, you know? CBC recording. But, yeah, I mean, what I was getting, when I say challenging, and my vantage point, I was in the audience noticing you making mistakes. That's what I meant by that. And
yeah, great.
No,
but that's the thing. Like, when you play a show at a club, like, making mistakes isn't really a big deal because the show isn't really about you, right? Like,
yeah.
if the people who are watching you aren't seated, they are the focus of the show. Like, the energy that the audience creates is what makes a punk show.
Right.
If I'm playing like Dose Your Dreams at fucking Roy Thompson Hall, and I make a mistake, like, that's the last time that's ever going to happen. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
we will not be getting invited back.
I suppose that's fair, but people do make mistakes. And all this to say, like, I hear what you're saying. It's very ambitious. This is something you can explore in a studio space a little more, in a more relaxed fashion than you could on stage. I get that part for sure. You've also released it or are releasing it in something of an interesting manner. You're releasing these large, huge songs, one act at a time, I believe. I guess it must be over the course of 4 months. There's 4 acts.
Yeah.
What prompted that release schedule and idea to release it as such?
We've never really got to do one of those surprise releases things, and I was just always just curious. And so this is sort of a slightly adjusted version of that.
Hmm.
And just, you know, we've been working on it for so long, like 6 years or something at this point. And, you know, when you release something on a label, it just takes, like, you hand it in and then it doesn't come out for like a year.
Yeah.
You just have to do so much waiting. And I just want it to be like, fuck it. Like, it's done. I want to get it out. It's a pandemic. We're probably not going to, like, this is the one record that we wouldn't really do a tour behind anyways.
Yeah.
And the press and the interest is always like very different for the Zodiacs anyways, because they're so confusing. I was just like, fuck it. Let's just put it out in this really quick way.
Yeah.
And in a way where, like, since it's so story focused, I wanted to do it in that serial way where people could take a month just with the song and you weren't worried about, like,
50 million interviews and reviews and mm-hmm. like, is there limited vinyl? It was just like, this is all you're getting is the music and the story. Just do that for a month and focus on it. And then you'll get another one in another month. We thought it was just a way to like have people really focus on just the music and the story for a couple months before like there was a lot of hoopla.
Yeah. No, it's wise because it's fairly dense. What did you just say about this interview? What did you just say?
You know, the hoopla, like this.
I don't consider this hoopla. No one's ever described an experience with me as, you know, being hoopla, but maybe it is. I never thought of that. It is such dense material that I think you've done a wise thing, but I guess it does beg the question, is there a plan? I think that I know this already, to be honest, but there's a plan for a physical release at some point?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That'll come out later.
Okay. But not like, could be a long time from now, I think, right?
It's not delayed. We'll probably announce it when the fourth one comes out.
Okay.
And then it'll take as long as it takes to like get vinyl made and stuff. Cause it's like not even finished, right? Like we're still, sides C and D haven't even, the mixes aren't finished yet.
Oh, I didn't know that. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's still being worked. It's still kind of being worked on.
So does that imply there aren't exact fixed release dates for the remaining sides?
There are.
And what are they? Or is that a surprise? Is that part of the surprise?
Well, it's only a surprise if you're dumb, right? Like the first two were on Bandcamp days. There's another Bandcamp day in April.
Okay.
And there's also one in May.
Oh, there are. Okay. That's right. They're doing them monthly now. Okay. Okay. So we'll keep an eye out for those Bandcamp days. I don't know them off the top of my head. Are they always the same day of the month? I don't even remember.
I think they're the first Friday of every month.
Oh, okay. There you go. Okay.
Yeah.
So we'll get those. And then what else is going on with you with Fucked Up? Like you said, some of this stuff, well, I guess you also just said some of it's still being mixed and worked on, but I assume, like, I can't remember. Was Fucked Up working on an album proper before the pandemic, or have you been working on stuff within it?
There's actually a ton. Like, I recorded a Fucked Up album a year ago that will come out. David Comes to Life turns 10 this summer, so there's going to be some stuff for that.
Oh, cool.
There's like actually so much stuff that is all going to have to like find time to come out now.
Okay.
After like not really having any, doing anything for a couple of years.
That's great. That's exciting. Yeah. I mean, have you had time to, is it because of the pandemic that you've had time to work on that stuff or ponder that stuff?
It's actually been harder to like, just because it's been so, I like can't write at my home really. Like I have to be in the studio to really write anything.
Yeah.
And at the beginning it was kind of, I was going into the studio and doing stuff and like fucking around, but then studio's closed. So since like last summer, basically, I've just been waiting. All the stuff, luckily most of the horse stuff was recorded and we were just mixing for the last year and like editing and stuff. But yeah, and just a lot of it now depends on when we can play shows again, because I don't want to put an actual album out without being able to tour with it.
Right.
So like, yeah, just waiting.
Okay. And is there any, it's not that interesting, I guess, but like some of this stuff will be probably coming out by a merge or someone, I'm guessing, or has anything changed in terms of where stuff will be in the end? In terms of labels and stuff?
We're on merge. Someone else is doing Horse just because of its limited nature.
Oh, okay.
And merge sort of graciously just let us do this weird experiment.
Hmm.
But we'll have some stuff coming out on merge. And Matador is doing some stuff. And,
oh,
yeah.
Because of David Comes to Life?
Yeah.
Right. Okay, cool. I don't want to get too businessy, but just curious. Okay. Well, yeah. No, it's good. Everything else is good. The band is as good as it can be at this point. You mentioned you might have some shows even.
I hope. Yeah. None of us have really seen each other for a year, so.
Yeah.
Usually that's good for people like us.
When you say you don't know where Ben is, what does that mean?
I think he got stuck in the States at the beginning of this pandemic.
He's in California, I think, somewhere.
I'm not really in touch with him, but yeah, I don't know where he is.
He's in California, he told me. Okay. So if you need to track him down, check the state of California. Okay, so where can people go to learn more about fucked up stuff as it stands, Mike, in terms of internet places?
Well, you know, we have some social media. They can go to that.
Are you still having fun on Twitter? You're running the fucked up Twitter. It's always, to me anyway, rather amusing. Are you enjoying it still?
It's okay. I found that, like, Twitter has become my homepage during the pandemic.
Yeah.
Like, which is bad, I guess. But that's sort of where I got my news from.
Yeah.
So I'm there. If people want to find, you know, stuff about us, it'll be there.
Right. And obviously the Bandcamp is a good place to hang out for fucked up people.
That's where the music goes, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Good.
The words go on Twitter and the music is on Bandcamp. Okay. Pictures. We have pictures on Instagram.
Right. Now, we've been getting this stuff as these lumbering, you know, long acts. Will this ever be divvied up as sort of individual tunes, so to speak?
No. It's just one song.
Yeah, actually, that's right. The whole thing is one song. We're getting it in acts, but it's really one giant. Okay.
Yeah, it doesn't divide up. Like, it just is one flowing thing.
Okay. One of the reasons I asked that is because normally at this point in a conversation, I will ask the guest to choose something for us to play that represents...
You have two choices, side A or side B.
But do you permit... I have no issue playing one of the acts, to be honest, on the show. I don't care because people can do what they want. They can stop. They can keep going. But do you really want me to do that? Do you want me to... Should we go to one of the acts that...
No.
No, we shouldn't.
You should pick like a 5-minute chunk and then put that up.
Okay, if we can't play a whole act, which is probably advisable, they're very long. What 5-minute chunk would you suggest I play for people right now?
I don't know. You should look at it. You can do that, right? Like
I can. I just wonder if there's a section in particular that you feel.
I don't know.
Like I mentioned the river part.
Yeah, do it.
Should we just grab the part where you're the river? From
sure.
This is
yeah,
from scene four, I think.
Go for it.
Should we do that? What were we going to say?
I just don't remember how it all flowed. Like, I haven't listened to the since the stuff comes out, I haven't listened to it. So I don't really remember how it all flows together.
I like that you're trying to say that you don't remember how the river flows.
I wasn't trying to say that.
I think you were. It flows fine. The river is... flowing just fine. So we're going to play something from scene four. Is this act one? I'm scrolling here. I think it is. Act one, scene four. And this is you, right, Mike? You're singing?
Yeah, I think Tuca might be on the section too, but I can't remember.
Okay. And yeah, I don't have much more to say, but I think people should make their own choices. So we'll hear a little 5-minute chunk or so. Is the river thing really 5 minutes? I don't think it is. But we'll start with the river and play something to its logical...
Play it for 5 minutes and then cut it off exactly 5 minutes.
No, I don't want to do that. I will play it to its logical conclusion, and then if you want to hear more, please go to Fucked Up's Bandcamp and do what I did. Buy the whole thing, and each month when they come out, you get a notification telling you the next act is available to download, but then you got to download the whole record all over again. Which
oh,
is,
really?
Well, that's what I had to... Yeah, I think so. I don't know. I was trying to, like, can I just download the second act? And no, it's a zip file with act one in it again. So then I gotta delete that. And then this is just my own personal problems. This is Fucked Up with scene four, act one, scene four, from The Year of the Horse, whose name was Percival. Mike, it's always fun to chat with you and delve deep into... the very confusing world of Fucked Up. Thank you for always thinking of me and making time for me, and I hope we talk soon. Best of luck.
Thanks, Fish. Thank you.
side is ten. A spell is made. The mages conjure something vile. Across the slate, the river bends. A chrysalis of blood and bile. The horse bow to slake her thirst, but found a rhyme in forgery. A river cursed, barren and foul, advanced then by sorcery. Scared and alone, dry as a bone, so far from home, compelled to roam.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Thanks again to Mike Halachuk of the band Fucked Up for coming back and appearing this time on the 605th episode of Creative Control, which is part of the Entertainment One podcast network and available wherever you get your podcasts. If you can't find an episode that you're looking for, or if you want to learn more about me, sign up for my monthly newsletter, please visit my website, vishkana.com. You can like Creative Control on Facebook, follow the show on Twitter at @vishcreative, or follow me on Twitter and on Instagram at @vishkana. Also, visit patreon.com/creativecontrol to make a flexible monthly donation. $6 or more grants you access to exclusive content. And if you're interested in receiving a Creative Control t-shirt, please message me on Patreon and I'll get you one while supplies last. Speaking of exclusive content, maybe I should revisit some of my earliest Fucked Up interviews and post them there, huh? Yeah, that might be a thing to do. Maybe grab some of those early Fucked Up conversations and put them on Patreon. Yeah, maybe I'll do that. Go to patreon.com/creativecontrol for more information about that. Thanks again to liveatmasseyhall.com, where you can watch beautifully captured concerts by great Canadian artists. And also Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee in Guelph, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton for their in-kind support for this show. Thanks, as always, to Jim Guthrie. He lends me some music of his that I can play on the show. And you can learn more about Jim at jimguthrie.org. And finally, thank you for listening to this episode with me and Mike from Fucked Up. And Mike, thank you for being back on the show. That was fun and interesting to learn more about the Year of the Horse. It's very sort of complicated. I hope you enjoyed that chat, and I hope you share it with your friends who might like Fucked Up, and maybe get them to check out the show, maybe subscribe to it, spread the word about it. All of that is very helpful. So thanks, and I will talk to you very soon. Bye for now.
Up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at hellofresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.